The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
But before we get into the show, if you like the SDR show and you want to have amazing sex, we want to tell you about a popular sexual enhancer, the Promescent Delay Spray, that's been used by over a million men and is clinically proven to help you last longer in bed. So it takes the edge off, it lowers the sensitivity, so you don't have to worry about finishing too soon. Just better sex guaranteed. No pesky subscription required. It's easy to use. It helps you last longer, and it gives you more confidence. What more could you ask for? So just go to Promescent.com. That's Promescent.com. There is not even a promo code. It don't matter. You have a 60-day money-back guarantee. You could feel confident. You can know you last longer. You want to have a little more excitement, look and feel more manly. You go to Promescent.com. That's what you should do, and do it now.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? Ralph Sutton, the SDR show. This week, a really good episode. The dude is John Taffer from Bar Rescue. First of all, he thinks James Madden is Big J Okerson the whole time, which is really funny. But he just was a really cool dude, really fun to talk to. We do this show every Wednesday, every Saturday. You could have heard this episode 5 days earlier. Imagine you're a huge John Taffer fan. You could have heard this commercial free in 5 days earlier. If you went to gasdigitalnetwork.com and use the code SDR, you get a 7-day free trial, 20% off the entire network. What more could you ask for? And you know what? I'm not even going to keep going. I just want you to get into this episode because it was really fun. It is John Taffer from Bar Rescue on the SDR show.
Studio, I'm around my employees. I'm contributing to fucking society. You know what I'm saying?
By
one rule or two. All of that work, think about this, Shannon, all that. Did you get up this morning and get out of bed?
I did.
Did you make yourself look good, do all the stuff that you do, put on some clothes? Now you're out in the world trying to do good. Ralph.
Yes.
Did you get up this morning? Did you get out of bed?
I mean, let me just say this. You are speaking my language like you wouldn't understand. I yell at this man to make his fucking bed every time we
listen
do the podcast.
Me.
Okay, here's the things I think about now.
Yes, sir.
Has he been wearing the same fucking underwear for 3 weeks? I wonder about that.
You spent
when was
more
the last time
he
was in the fucking shower? I wonder about that.
I just got out of the shower, sir. I just did. I'm on the road right now, and the room I used yesterday will be occupied by children any minute now. So I have to be here. I figured it'd be fun. Also, this
so you're
great.
In a cheap fucking hotel room, doesn't even have a chair.
I'm in a house, sir, and I'm doing this in the room, and then I leave the minute we're done to go do stand-up outdoors.
I'm more interested,
hold
by
on,
the way.
He's doing what? What is he doing, Shannon? He's doing stand-up.
Yes,
well, that's why he's lying down now.
I
he's going to be doing
rest,
so much
sir.
Standing up.
I get it.
I also like John. So quickly,
I'm sensing there might be rectal issues here, but that's
but
another
it just amazes
well,
me how
later,
quickly
yes.
how quickly you went to James's underwear and James being naked. That was like your first two thoughts, so I like that as a start.
Yes.
Well, you know, I'm concerned about his general hygiene.
I thought you were going to say genitals for sure.
No. Hygiene.
Okay. I just got out of the shower, sir. I am cleaner than
he actually is a clean fellow. If not a messy fellow, he is a clean fellow.
Okay.
Yes.
Fact of the matter is, Jay, I'm just fucking with you. You know that, buddy.
I love it. I'm so happy that this is how it's starting. This is wonderful, sir. I'll only be in bed with interviews with you going forward.
It's about 40 minutes.
Let's do that. Let's make it a nice little tradition between us.
Cool. Pinky swear.
It's about 40
minutes.
Maybe
we should
long,
do a bed to bed interview one day. I'll be in mine. You'll be in yours.
This will be great. We'll be like the modern day John Lennon and Yoko.
I was just going to say that. Yep. Okay.
Just so you know, John, it was like, I don't know, 2 months ago, we were about to do an interview like this. And I looked and he was sitting at the edge of his bed and his bed wasn't made. And before the guest came out, I'm like, could you fucking make your bed for Rob Schneider, please? Like, just look like you care. Anyway, it's about 40 minutes. There's only one pre-planned question, which is at the end of the show where we ask you about your first experience with sex, drugs, and rock and roll. That's the name of the show, the SDR show. So the first concert you ever went to, the first drug you ever did, the first time you had sex, but you have 40 minutes to think about it. We're going to talk about the show, the new tavern, the new restaurant tavern place, the mixologist stuff, the podcast. all that other shit, and we'll just get into it. It's very conversational. You've done these 1,000 times. I don't see it being a problem.
Yeah, go for it. I'm easy, guys. Whatever you want to do, I'm along for the ride.
Okay, you ready, kids?
Yeah, and for the record, I'm keeping that all in, but this will be the official start.
Yeah, of course. How could you not? I would say this, though. You're a little off-centered. Everything else about your shot is perfect. Here we go.
He's being artistic.
Yo, man, I'm trying to do this for MoMA.
Oh, what's going on? His camera? Oh, wow, they listened to me. That's crazy.
That's amazing.
They fixed it. I made it happen. That's so weird.
I got a solid team here, guys.
Wow, that was impressive. Holy shit. Okay, here we go. Ready, Shannon?
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is the hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone fuck the host. It's beat, I beat. It's hookers and blow. It's art, it's art. You need to know. The SDR show. Let's go.
It is the SDR show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. Back with me once again, lying very comfortably in his bed, it is James Mattern.
Yo, I'm chilling, dog. I'm wearing sweatpants like a gentleman, B.
James, don't get up. Don't worry about it. Don't get up. I don't want to inconvenience you. And of course, Shannon producing at the Gas Digital Studios. I am home. Going to be there in a little bit to do the show live in a few hours in the interest of full disclosure. And right now, so happy to have this guy. And I'm going to say this. There's several fans of this show for 4 years, I would say, have been saying, please get this guy on the show. So I'm so happy to have him on. He's the host of Bar Rescue. He has his own podcast called the John Taffer Podcast. I'm sure you can figure out his name by now. A couple of books like Don't Bullshit Yourself, Raise the Bar. He has these mixologist mixers and seltzers, and he just opened recently Taffer's Tavern, the first of many in Georgia. It is John Taffer. How are you, sir?
Good to be here, guys. I'm all about sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Rock on.
You know, I started my life in a troubadour in the late 1970s, and it was about that then.
I know this. I'd like to hear, there was a story I heard that fucking made me laugh so much about it, and I would rather you tell it than I, which is about the time there was a Cleveland Indians game.
Oh, yes. It was actually a Washington Redskins game.
Sorry, my mistake.
And I was running the Troubadour. And a Troubadour, as you guys know, has a little front bar, holds maybe 100 people. And then the showroom holds 1,200 people. There's a balcony. It's a big showroom. Very famous venue. This was a Tuesday night. And the owner of the club back then, Doug Weston, gave the club to Native Americans. So we had Indian drummers, Indian comics, Indian dancers, Indian art. The whole thing was Indian. Bunch of Indians were there. Even some non-Indians that you thought were Indians, like the guy who played Chief in Cuckoo's Nest was there, and all these people were there. And this was before Indian gaming, when Native American reservations were really in a bad place. So it was a well-intended event. This was the day that the Washington Redskins lost a football game in the last 30, 45 seconds of the game would have put them in a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. And I had a $25 bet with a friend of mine who was an entertainment lawyer. You're going to love this, Jay, at ICM. He walks through the front door of the Troubadour. I'm standing at the corner of the bar, and he looks across the room and he says at the top of his lungs, "Those fucking Redskins."
Oh, Bubba.
I look up and he said it a second time. Not sure if I understood him. "Those fucking Redskins." They broke his collarbone. And you know, they jumped on him, and he thought he was walking into a rock and roll room, and he walked into a room filled with Native Americans. The nicest, most liberal, most unbiased, unprejudiced guy in the world. The next day, the Indians were signing his cast, and you know, it became all a funny story. But that's a pretty classic Troubadour story.
Yeah, Troubadour is a legendary place, and that's where you got your start. But I want to go through a couple things real quick. First of all, I believe it's next week. Happy early birthday, right? Your birthday is right on the corner.
You did your homework, yeah.
Yeah, and also you are, which I didn't even know there was one of these, one of the first inductees in the Nightclub Hall of Fame. Is that like a long history? Do they do awards every year? I've never even heard of it until I started looking into you.
Yeah, you know, it's run by the Nightclub and Bar Convention in Vegas. They do it, I guess, periodically. I don't think they do it every year. Mm-hmm. But I'm in there. Hugh Hefner's in there.
I wonder if Peter Gation. You know Peter Gation? Is he in there? I wonder if he is.
I'm not sure. There's only about 8 or 10 of us in there. There's not that many, actually. So I guess it's an honor because it's done by your peers.
Yeah,
so
that's
it
a
means
pretty
something
wild thing.
When your peers do it.
So we're all, I believe, James, I forget where you're born.
Las Vegas.
Las Vegas. But
really?
You and I and Shannon are all fellow New Yorkers. And I know Las Vegas means a lot to you, so we'll get into that as well. But as fellow New Yorkers, when did you leave New York? Like, when did you move out to L.A. to do the Troubadour and stuff? Like, what year?
Well, you know, when I was in high school, I took drum lessons for 9 years. I was really into it and I was very good. Classical jazz drumming. Mm-hmm. So I went to California back then. A lot of us did to pursue the music industry. Okay. So the way I wound up running the Troubadour is a funny story. I was in bands and we played at the Troubadour and the Whiskey and the Roxy in all those days. And we were doing that whole thing. And one day I was at Doug Weston's house and we were talking about booking. And he looked at me, he goes, I hate this place. And he threw the keys across the table. And I had the keys to the Troubadour in my hand. And I started running it that day. That's how it happened.
That's crazy. Yeah. And you started as a doorman and then became a manager, right? That's you worked your way up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you never, ever had aspirations to be a jazz drumming legend. You, as you got into the nightclub industry, you started understanding, oh, this is what I want to do.
Yeah, I love business, you know, and, mm-hmm. and I've owned the only patent ever issued for the management of music to achieve a desired ambiance in hospitality properties. I'm a freaking nutcase, guys. I created a database years ago of 70,000 songs, all coded by energy level, beats per minute, key,
wow.
instrumentation. So I used my music knowledge to manage music, a post-production, if you will, music programs for dance venues, for rock venues. So I'm very music oriented. And even in Taffer's Tavern to this day, every song that's played in my restaurants is literally curated demographically, beats per minute, upward movement, downward movement. There's mm-hmm. a real science to music. So I carry a lot of that with me is mm-hmm. my point, Ralph, to this day, but I'm still a musician at heart. I play my steering wheel now.
So let me ask you this. So I watched, you know, I'm well established on the show. I do way too much research for people and whatnot, but I watched a couple of your seminars, which is how you ended up on Bar Rescue, right? You're yeah. known as the guy that was teaching businesses in the F&B space on how to increase their profits, et cetera. And somehow that led to you getting Bar Rescue. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I was giving a speech at a convention. And after the speech, somebody comes up to me and says, you should be on television. So I go home and I never thought about being on television before, but I'm a good speaker. Mm-hmm. And I wrote something up about 3 pages called On the Rocks. Okay. And it was sort of a cross between Kitchen Nightmares and Mission Impossible. So I would have files, guys, of different chefs, just like they had the files of the agents in Mission Impossible. And I would pull out the files that I wanted. And then I would be dropped into these business emergencies. And that would be the show. So I write it up. And I had consulted to Paramount years earlier on restaurant projects like Bubba Gump Shrimp Company and things like that. Okay. So I go to my friends at Paramount and I drive through the big gates and I go to the big office building and I sit down and I show them I write up and I'm really excited. And they look at me, quote, John, you will never fucking be on television. You're too old. You're not good looking enough. Forget it. So I drive out of the Paramount gates and I say, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to make my own sizzle reel. So mm-hmm. I shot my own 3-minute sizzle reel, sent it to 4 production companies, got 4 out of 4 offers, by the
Jesus way. Jesus Christ. Wait a minute. But did you figure out how do you edit this shit? You just figured it out.
I figured it out. I did it with some friends and I figured it out.
Oh, my God.
You know, I went to a bar that was empty on a Saturday and full on a Sunday for football. So I started mm-hmm. it and I changed it and I created the story. And my wife at the time was wearing like a booby cam, a little camera between her boobs and her uh-huh. low cut top. And so I got 4 offers. I chose the production company that I thought was the best, not the best offer, but the best company. Mm-hmm. So I chose 3 Ball because they were doing Biggest Loser and I had some really good quality, high profile reality shows. And then the show premiered on Spike almost a year later. Now, guys, I'm 225 episodes.
Congratulations. I was going to say, congratulations on that. That's really amazing. Because some of your seasons,
$1 billion in revenue this year.
Some of your seasons were like batshit crazy long, like 45, 50 episodes.
Crazy.
But I don't think you're doing that so much anymore. But that's how you're able to get over 200 episodes in 8 seasons.
I'm doing now 25. I just agreed to 25 wow. more. I can't believe I freaking agreed to it. And we're doing them all between now and July.
Jesus.
I'm pretty much on the road now. And that's the bummer, guys, is the traveling. You know, this is comedians. I mean, the show is great. If you could walk out on venues all day long without getting on planes, your lives would be a lot, clearly best. A lot better. So I love the work. I just hate the freaking travel.
John, so I like that you're like the Michael Jordan of this. They told you no. And you go, wait, you cut me from the team. I'm going to win this son of a bitch.
Yeah.
And I did. This.
And you know what it taught me, Jay? It taught me that the only person in the world that can say no to me is me.
It's the best.
It's good. Yeah. By the way, I have a lot of questions because you and I will say that I've been very involved in the F&B space for years and in music in a lot of ways. So I look at you as like the more successful version of me for what of that space. But I had to ask this because I watched that seminar
And I, so we're going back to when I was in my 20s. I was a strip club DJ at some of the biggest strip clubs in the country, right? Pure Platinum, Scores, all these places. And listening to your speech sounded like all my managers at the end of the night, they'd give these staff meetings. I'm curious, did you consult for any of those strip clubs back in the day? Because I could have like literally written down what they wrote 20 years ago, and it's what you said verbatim.
It was a gentleman by the name of Peters. Boy, he owned Platinum. He owned Solid
Gold. Michael J. Peters. That's why.
Michael J. Peters. Thank you. I did consult to Michael J. Peters many, many years ago.
Right. We're talking many years ago. Right.
Many. I'm talking 20, 25 years
ago.
Yeah,
exactly.
I did consult to Michael J. years ago. I believe he was in prison for RICO charges.
Yeah, he was. He was, exactly. But at the time, he owned Pure Platinum in the city. I worked.
And Solid Gold. And
Solid Gold. And yeah, all those. I was their DJ. And they would give these meetings, A, the music Bible that we had to follow. I was watching how you talk about like tracking sales of everything that sold. And they would give these meetings at the end of the night where they would go through everything sold, VIP rooms, blah, 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 and asking like, why did this DJ make more money? Why did this girl make more money? And try and analyze it every night. And watching that speech, it gave me like PTSD for being in those meetings at 5 a.m. 30 years ago. It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, the principles haven't changed that much. You know, Solid Gold isn't in the business of boobs. They're in the business of reactions.
Right.
The boobs and the drinks are just the vehicle to get the reactions. But at the end of the day, if the reaction isn't created, the boobs are meaningless, right?
Right. Well, I would
wouldn't you agree with that, Shannon?
Shannon, are your boobs meaningless?
Look, my boobs are covered right now.
Just about my point is, if a boob doesn't create a great reaction, then what's the point?
Or just a reaction. I think any reaction is a good reaction.
I don't want to get in trouble, but I've seen a lot of meaningless boobs. I'll tell you that. I've seen plenty of them. I'm in the suburbs right now. I mean, what are my options, baby? What are we going to do? I'm in the suburbs. What am I going to do?
Also, I saw on your Instagram, you met, I don't know if it's the first time, but you met Smokey Robinson. Was that the first time ever?
Oh, man, first time ever. That was really, what a cool freaking dude he is.
That is so fucking cool.
In his 80s and his energy and you know what got me, guys, and I'm sure you've had these moments when somebody as famous as a Smokey Robinson knows who you are.
That's
and
great.
Walks up to you and says, man, I'm a big fan. Those are incredible moments.
Well, that's never happened to me, but I really appreciate it. I'm sure they can imagine.
Imagine if I'm at an event and somebody walks
up to me.
I can
put it in my head, John. I can't, you know, it never actually happened. But
guy walks up and he says, John, I'm Smokey's manager. He'd like to meet you.
Wow.
And I walked up and that's how that happened. And we took that picture. But that was an unbelievable event. And what a freaking cool guy. Over 1,000 songs he wrote.
That's crazy. He signed. I can't believe he still performs, I think, right?
Oh, he got up and he played. He did a couple of songs that night. He was unbelievable.
Damn it, that's so cool.
He looks like he hits the gym for 2 hours a day now. He looks like he can throw hands.
He's a complete vegan. Complete vegan. Has been for about 40 years.
You see how Shannon got happy? Shannon's been a vegan for about 2 years now. It makes her happy every time.
Well, he's a nut about it, Shannon. He's really, in far as his diet is concerned, he's a health nut about it. Look at how good he looks, so.
Let me ask you, I'm going to ask you like a bunch of questions and I apologize, John. I'm sure you get a lot of these all the time, but I know that you've been known for one of the key advocates for, I mean, key ways to build a business. Like if your bar is struggling, whatnot, come up with some sort of crazy promotion, whether it's, you know, I heard you say somewhere free test drives for a car or whatever. In your mind, can you think of one that you're like, well, that was fucking batshit crazy. And I can't believe we actually did that.
Okay, well, this is now a promotion that I did back around 1980, 1981.
Okay.
We did it in Long Beach, California. And boy, am I going to get in trouble for saying it in Canadian sense. However, you made it earlier. It was midget tossing.
All right.
Fair. And what we did is we had one of those air mattresses set up outside the bar. And we booked 4 midgets.
Okay.
And we had from an entertainment agency. And we had a leather vests made that had 2 handles down the back.
Okay.
So Jay would take one handle, Ralph, you take the other handle, and together you'd swing the midget, and teams would toss the midget, and then we'd measure how distant it was. So I actually got arrested for this.
Wow.
So we're running it for 2 or 3 weeks. It's a huge event. Everybody loves it. And the police come, and they tell me that it's endangerment, discrimination, blah, 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 public endangerment. They tell me that I have to stop. So I call my lawyer. I say, they're telling me I have to stop. It's a great promotion. What should I do? He says, have the midget sign waivers. I'll send you a waiver. Have him sign the waiver. We'll be fine. So the midget signed the waiver. Son of a gun. I got arrested the next week for midget tossing in Long Beach, California. Charges were dropped, and it disappeared. But I've always enjoyed the fact that I'm probably the only person in the history of the state of California to be arrested for midget tossing.
I just would love to hear that conversation when you were in jail asking, what are you in here for?
Yeah, yeah. I murdered someone. What about you? I sanctioned an event where we threw midgets so we could get people inside the venue. Oh, all right.
Now, I ran a restaurant for 4 years here in New York City, and I also helped build one of the biggest raw juice and vegan food companies in New York called Juice Press. I was involved with both of those years ago. For me, it took me a long time, and still to this day, it's hard to do. Go sit at a bar or go sit at a restaurant without analyzing every fucking thing where I could not enjoy myself. Are you able to switch modes, or are you always looking at this like what could be done better?
I am incapable of not getting angry when I see something like that. So the only defense that I have is not to fucking see it in the first place. Wow. So I have really trained myself to just ignore shit when I'm out. You know, just try to ignore it. Try to keep my eyes on you. Keep my eyes. Because if I do see it, it's really hard, especially when it's stupid stuff or stuff that endangers people or sanitation issues. And that shit drives me absolutely crazy. But you know, that's who I am. You know,
it is amazing, by the way, how often it is not done right. You know, and even for me, because I'm also have a strong music background, music drives me crazy when sometimes you'll be in a restaurant and a CD will be skipping for fucking 3 minutes and nobody notices it. Things like that, that just fuck up the mood. And if nobody's paying attention, it's crazy to me. It's very hard for me to enjoy a restaurant very often.
It's a business person's lunch and a new manager comes on duty and he drops his AC/DC disc in there.
One time, my brother, who ran a restaurant too, and it was a Halloween, which is right around while we're taping this, it just happened. And he played a spooky Marilyn Manson song. I forget, he did a cover of Sweet Dreams, and he didn't realize the next song's chorus was called the Motherfucker Hate Anthem or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like all these nice people, and all of a sudden that song came on. You know, just if you don't plan ahead, it's really funny. It really is. It's amazing how the service industry, how important every aspect is, from how they're greeted, how often you come to the table, you know, things like that. I want to ask you a question. I always get annoyed, and I'm sorry to be so fixated on specific details. When I ask a waiter the specials and he says, tonight I have this, I always bothers me. These persons, it should be we or on the menu. When he makes it like he cooked it, it bothers me. Maybe I'm crazy. I'm just kidding.
No, that's completely right. It's we have tonight. Yeah, the chef has tonight.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not I. You know, this. Yeah. I think you're dealing with a narcissistic waiter there.
Yeah, very much so. Now,
you know what's interesting, guys? I want to sum up this restaurant discussion. You see, I don't think the cook in the kitchen is making an entree. I don't think that the entree and the plate is our product. I believe that the cook in the kitchen is producing a reaction. Mm-hmm. The plate of food is the vehicle to that reaction.
It's like the
boobs. You guys don't make podcasts. You create reactions. You achieve it through a podcast, don't you?
Right.
And radio stations shouldn't play music. They should play reactions. They should achieve it through music. So I don't believe that restaurants are in the business of food and beverage. I believe we're in the business of reactions. So we take it to a different level. I'll send a plate out, and if you don't sit up, Ralph, I'll redesign that plate 100 times. Look, Jay's sitting up.
I just sit up now. You spoke
if you don't sit up and react to that plate, I'll change it 100 times until you do.
Right.
I understand that the business is about reactions, and he or she who creates the best reactions wins. Just like comedy, just like podcasts, we're in a reaction business.
All right, before we go any further, everyone, God, I love this sponsor. It's great when we love our sponsors. We try to only bring on products that we either know are great, we really enjoy, etc. And you can't go wrong with Blue Chew and their chewables. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in a chewable form at a fraction of the cost. You know we've been talking about them forever. They combat all forms of erectile dysfunction. Blue Chew is an online prescription service. No doctor visits, no awkward conversations, no waiting in line in the pharmacy. It ships direct to your door in a discreet package. It's so simple. You just sign up at BlueChew.com. You consult with one of their licensed medical providers. And once you're approved, you'll receive your prescription within days. It's all done online. It's the same active ingredients, and it's chewable. So you know it happens faster. You know, it's a beautiful thing. I tell you the true story. Right before Skankfest, Jay said, I got all my Blue Chew chewables ready for the weekend. It's a beautiful thing. We all love it. You know, it's so easy to talk about a product that you know works and that you love. So just go to BlueChew.com, use the code SDR. You get your first one free. You just pay the $5 shipping. $5 shipping at BlueChew.com. Use the code SDR. Thank you, Blue Chew, for being a part of this podcast for so long. Get their chewables going. You don't have to swallow pills. It happens faster. That's all you need to know.
Go out there right now and get a hard dong. Who doesn't want a hard dong? Oh, let's get back into it.
How often do you go back to the bars that you've been on with Bar Rescue, like after the shows? Do you stay in touch with these people to see, like, I'd be curious if you even know your how many of them are still open, how many of them are still thriving? Do you track that at all to know where you are with the I guess 8 years, 220 episodes, yeah, where you are with that?
There's an independent site that tracks all that stuff and does reviews and all of that called Bar Rescue Updates. Pre-pandemic, we were running about 70% success factor.
Wow, that's pretty strong.
And I'm very proud of that because competitive shows are like in the 20s, honestly.
Yeah.
So, but we really do the work. I mean, we really train them. We really put the menus in. We don't do anything for camera. It's all for them. I like to say that, you know, the camera's along for the ride.
Right. But what I like that you do, which I found this out again recently, is that you'll, because everyone's well aware, oh, we're being filmed. So you set up the cameras beforehand and you fuck with them a little bit. Like maybe you show up late or you show up early or you tell them you're not coming so you can get genuine reactions from people as opposed to them saying, oh, here he comes. Let's all put on our best suits and act like we're nice.
Oh, yeah. You great research, Rob. I'll fuck with them big time to keep it real. So, for example, we'll hang some extra lights in the room. Mm-hmm. And then when I'm supposed to come there, the producers will go in and say, I'm sorry, guys, he chose another bar. He's not coming. They'll start pulling those extra lights down. Suddenly, everybody lets their hair down. They get real. And then I freaking walk in. Sometimes they think I'm coming tomorrow. I come today. I come a day late. They don't think I'm coming at all. I mean, I got to keep it real, guys. If they know I'm coming, the place is going to be spotless. And it's so we got to fuck with them to keep it real.
I think it's brilliant. I think it's fucking brilliant.
Goddamn Taskmaster. This is unbelievable, sir. Can I just say this? Listen to you. Sometimes before gigs to get motivated, I'll watch on YouTube Al Pacino's speech at the end of any given Sunday. Never again. I'm just going to watch you talk about the food industry and playing head games with these fuckers. I'll never have a bad gig again, sir. Never again. Yeah. I'll send you 10%. Done.
Thank you,
done, buddy. Unbelievable.
Shannon, make a note of the 10%, would you? I want that little piece of footage.
And, by the way, on that note, so like I have to imagine every time you go out, every friend of yours or friend of a friend that's thinking about opening up a bar or restaurant, all the time, people have to ask you, hey, can you ask him for advice? It's like a doctor times 100, I would imagine.
You know, sometimes it's the opposite. One of my best friends opens a bar in New York. I won't say which one. And he falls on his fucking face. So I call him up and I say, you've known me for all of these years. He went to, how do you open a bar and not fucking call me? I didn't want to bother you, John. You know, you're famous now, John. So it's amazing that more friends don't call me to tell you the truth, Ralph. I'd be happy to help them.
It's funny because when I said you were coming on, like five of my friends were like, can you ask him this? I'm like, no, Mike, just fucking shut the fuck up. You know, I'm opening up an Irish pub. I mean, just shut up. Let me just have fucking conversation. Fucking ridiculous. You know what I liked is that you openly embrace this, that you are an asshole and you have to be to get people. I mean, you know, that is what it is. Like people don't react, which I hate that this is the truth, but in the, like they had this video of a guy where he put a box in the paint on a sidewalk. Right. And he dressed up as a civil servant. And as people walking by, he goes, hey, could you not step in the box, please? And everybody said, fuck it, and walk through the box. And then when he said, no stepping in the box, like really everybody avoided it. And unfortunately, we're all wired that we don't respond to just gentle gestures. You need a little bit of a shock therapy.
I also think there's a difference between being an asshole and acting like an asshole.
Right.
See, there are things that could piss off Jay that makes him turn into a complete prick. It doesn't mean he is a prick. He's a good guy. At that moment, he was a fucking prick, but he had a reason to be. So to me, the anger and stuff that I have is surprisingly deliberate, guys. It is, and it's surprisingly manipulative. Honestly, I'm not really that angry most of the time. Mm-hmm. But you nailed it, Ralph. I'm trying to crack through. You know, I'm trying to make a difference, and I don't have a lot of time to do it. And I'm finding if the less time I have, the louder I need to be.
Have you and Gordon Ramsay ever had a scream off?
We've never had a scream off. We're friends,
you're,
though.
But you know, you're about to open restaurants competing in the same market. You're right. You're both going to be in D.C., right?
We are going to both be in D.C. I'm going to have to go eat in his, and he'll have to come eat in mine. But nah, look, I love and have a lot of respect for Gordon. Robert Irvine also is a very good friend of mine. And I'm not supposed to say this, but I will. But Robert and I have a collaboration show that we've worked on that's going to be on Discovery pretty soon.
Oh, that's cool.
But I'll let them talk about it because I'm going to get in trouble if I do. But No, I tend to be good friends with everybody. I think.
But have you met Gordon a few times?
Sure.
That's cool.
I've actually been a customer on Hell's Kitchen.
Oh, that's funny.
So I actually sat at a table and had Gordon's food during one of the episodes of Hell's Kitchen.
You know, it's funny. I'm not going to, because I know, which I've watched enough interviews of you that I give you the kudos for this. You don't ever throw people under the bus. Like, you won't say this guy, this. Like, you'll say, I'll tell you a story, but I'm not going to tell you who, which I respect. But so I'm not going to ask you to say who. But on these, I'm imagining very often you've been at celebrity chef restaurants, celebrity chef bars. Have you been to some where you're like, holy fuck, how is this succeeding? The food sucks. The service sucks. How is this popular? Does that happen a lot to you?
It's happened to me three times with three celebrity brands that I was really disappointed that they would execute that way. Mm-hmm. And I wondered candidly if they had even tasted the food themselves. And of course, I won't say who, no matter what. But
yeah, I'm not asking you to. I know you don't do that. But,
you know, it's interesting. When celebrities open restaurants, if you look at a non-celebrity restaurant's ratings on Google and Yelp and all that stuff, and you look at a celebrity's ratings, you'll find that the celebrity restaurant always has a lower rating, even if it's a better experience. Because consumers expect more from that celebrity restaurant. So, you know, these guys are really foolish when they don't deliver properly.
I also, by the way, I'm not trying to give you, like, keep blowing smoke up your ass, but there was another thing you said that I've given the same speech at restaurants as well, where it's so easy to blame outside sources. It's too hot. It's too cold. It's the first day of spring. It's raining. Whatever. You can make an excuse for every day of the fucking year, but the bottom line is people aren't coming.
Oh, I got to tell you how that happened. Quick story. I'm in Detroit, Michigan. I'm shooting the 120th episode of Bar Rescue. And every episode, I always ask the owner, why are you failing? Mm-hmm. This time I look at the owner of this bar and I say to her, why are you failing? And she looks at me in Detroit, Michigan and says, I'm failing because of the euro in Greece. What the fuck? And I said, what? And she said it again. And at that moment, I realized 120 episodes of Bar Rescue, never once did any owner ever say, John, I'm failing because of me. Not one freaking time.
That's
so
really
then
funny.
I realized every one of them has an excuse. And then I realized, holy shit, I found a common denominator of failure. It's an excuse. Because what is the definition of an excuse? It's the reconciliation of a mistake. Either you did something you shouldn't have, you didn't do something you should have, or you otherwise fucked up, or you wouldn't need the goddamn excuse.
Right,
so
right.
What do? We come up with excuses in our lives to make ourselves feel good about our own failure, and then we sleep like a freaking baby. So my second book, Don't Bullshit Yourself, is all about the premise and the science of excuses and how excuses paralyze us. So in that book, I ripped apart the big five excuses: fear, knowledge, scarcity, blah, blah, blah. And it was really powerful. So, you know, excuses are the exact way. I mean, Jay, when I sat down here and beat the fuck out of you being in bed, what is the first thing you did? You threw excuses at me. Oh, I'm here. I'm not there. I got to do this. I can't do that.
Very good point.
The whole thing. So that's life. So let's own it. John, I'm in a bed because I fucking want to be. I don't need an excuse.
Yo, I'm comfortable as a motherfucker, John.
Say it, brother. Say it. My point is this. When this woman wakes up in the morning in Detroit, Michigan, and looks in the mirror and says to herself, I'm failing because of the euro in Greece, she has no reason to change.
But
Ralph, if she looked in the mirror and said, I'm failing because of me, she would change.
And also, by the
way, that's powerful.
Whenever
you
admit
your mistake, hold ourselves accountable. That's my point.
When you admit your mistake, let's say you're arguing with someone and you say, I fucked up. I know I fucked up. If they continue the argument, then they're the asshole. You know what I mean? Like, once you admit, oh, yeah, I shouldn't have done that, or, oh, that was on me. And so many people don't want to ever admit that they're wrong. It's amazing to me. I love to admit I'm wrong. I'm wrong all the fucking time. It is what it is.
Well, you're a professional at being wrong. You get to that level.
I'm very good at that. Yeah, that's how I get to where I am. I'm always wrong. Just do opposite of what I do, and you'll do just fine.
Can I blame everything on the euro in Greece going forward? Like, if people are like, yo, are you still with that girl? I'm like, nah, man.
The euro in Greece
screwed it all up, man.
Sometime, Ralph, in a future podcast, when you least expect it, Jay is going to say it's because of the euro in Greece. It
or
could be months
boobs.
From now.
Right. Maybe both. Greece, they were affected by the euro. Holy
well, maybe
shit,
couldn't
we did it.
Because the euro, they couldn't afford their boob job, and that's why.
There it is.
There we go. All right. Before we continue, if you're an auto mechanic or a guy that works on his car or just likes to the whole car universe, I want to tell you about these guys. I've seen their commercials on TV too all the time. It's rockauto.com, the online store with every auto part at the best possible prices. It's your one-stop shop for everything auto parts. Rockauto.com.
has been in business for 20 years, 20 fucking years, and they make it easy to find the best parts at the best possible prices. No more talking to counter guys who need to order your parts, aren't really sure what you're looking for, or never have quite what you're looking for after all that hassle. And they'll still charge you those storefront markups, but not at rockauto.com, where you can find everything you need easily, whether you're a mechanic, an auto shop, or just some dude working on your car. Get the incredible pricing and the same incredible pricing at rockauto.com. So head on over to rockauto.com, and here is how confident they are. There is no discount code. You don't need a discount code. But tell them when you place that order that you heard about them on the SDR show. That would make us happy. That would make them happy. And that would continue to allow us to do the show for you guys. So head to rockauto.com now, and let's get back into it. Now, since the 220 episodes, is that what you said, right?
Something like that. I was counted.
Three times you walked out.
Yeah.
Right? And do you remember, like, each one of them were similar situations or for, like, different types of scenarios?
Well, the commonality is the owner was an asshole in each one. And I didn't want to perpetuate their assness, if you will. So my own word, I love the word assness. So, you know, one of them, I'm sitting in his bar and I'm snooping and I'm going through his security disc and I'm looking at video and I see a video of him slapping an employee across the face.
Jesus Christ.
So that was that. You know, I'm not perpetuating. I don't want anything to do with that. So that was the first one I walked out on. That was O-Face. The other one I walked out in Chicago is a great one. I was doing a bar across the street from Wrigley Field when the Cubs were in the World Series. Was this 2 years ago? And this guy was such a dick. I called him Smiling Ed because he would never smile. So during the stress test, I said, Ed, there's only one thing I want you to do during the stress test. You don't need to touch a glass. You don't need to do anything. Smile one fucking time during the stress test. He couldn't do it. He hated his employees. Great. He was such a jerk. But I had to remodel the bar. I couldn't walk away because Chicago knew I was there. The Cubs are in the World Series, so I couldn't walk away. So I remodeled the entire bar. Stood in front of the bar with his employees. And when Ed came up for the reveal, I threw the keys at him and I walked away with his employees. Everybody quit.
Wow.
And the show ended with Smiling Ed standing in front of his bar saying, hey, can anybody bartend? Can anybody bartend? Trying to staff his bar.
That's fucking great.
You know, in every one of those cases, guys, look, Bar Rescue is real. In my view, those people got what they deserved.
Right. That's great. Yeah. And have you stayed friends with some of these people like years later?
Most.
Oh, yeah, that's nice. That's cool.
You know, the greatest part of the show, honestly, guys, you know, I always say that at the end of Bar Rescue, I get two things. I get a hug and I get a check. The check meant a lot in the beginning.
By the way, same thing to all of my ex-girlfriends after we have sex.
I hear you. But the hug means so much. And the things they whisper in your ear when you're in that hug, you don't hear because the microphones are in our chest. You know, thank you, John. You saved my life. You helped my marriage, blah, blah, blah. It's an incredibly rewarding thing. What a blessing. Think about this, guys, to be able to go to these cities. These people are struggling. They're losing their house. They're this and that. And to be able to say 70% of the time, I've turned their lives around. I got them the money to get their kids to college. You know, I saved their house for them. It's an amazing blessing to be able to do something like this. It really is.
Is there any one of them where you thought, oh, for sure, these guys knocked it out of the park. We turned it around. And yet 6 months later, they went out of business. Like, you couldn't believe it. Like, some of them, I'm sure you are aware, this guy didn't change or this is too far gone. But have there been a couple of times like, I can't believe they went out of business?
No, actually, I've been pretty good at knowing when I leave who's going to make it and who's not.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
A friend of mine was actually on the
show. Because remember, every failing business has a failing owner. Right. So I can build them the freaking Taj Mahal and then, you know, certain people will burn it anyway.
A friend of mine was on one of your episodes years ago, a metal guy. I come from the metal background. I think also ties into the last season because I think it was in Vegas, but not from that season. Tim Owens, who sang with the priest for a bit. And I think he did go out of business eventually, but I would probably blame him because I know him well enough to say that.
Yeah. I mean, he was a rock star in the restaurant business and he didn't run it with all the love that he should have. He hoped that his local, I thought he was with Wisconsin, maybe it was, but he thought that the local community would support it just because of who he was. But the reality of is if your food sucks, nobody's going to come.
Yeah. They'll get you in the door the first time.
Right.
But that's it. You know, that it's so many times. Like, I just went to a restaurant 2 days ago. Everything about the place was amazing. Looked beautiful, good staff, well-trained, everything executed, except the food sucked. I'm like, well, I would might come here for a drink and a date once in a blue moon, but it would have been my new haunt if they fucking nailed the food. And we tried enough things to know, oh, the food fucking sucks. But
your last season was in Vegas, and you still live in Vegas, right? Correct?
I do.
Right. And it was all exclusive to not strip places, but places for the locals to help rebuild the community that of the people that go to feed everybody else for the, that industry. I imagine because of COVID, a lot of these places are suffering due to no fault of their own.
That's
so
exactly
you had
right.
to attack it differently, right?
I did. It's exactly right. You know, it's a valid excuse in some cases. But, you know, I got to tell you, Jay, being one who was born here, to drive down the strip and see all the casinos boarded up, everything closed, people walking down the middle of the strip. I mean, it brought a tear to your eye. It was unbelievably upsetting. Las Vegas is a singular economy. We're a hospitality based economy. We don't have agriculture. We don't have other industries here.
Yeah,
so when those casinos shut down, our city was devastated. We had a 35% unemployment, highest in the country.
Jesus.
So our city was devastated more than any other. So being able to direct the show, and look, I'm fortunate. I'm now executive producer of my own show, and I can move it where I need to and do what I do. Being able to do it at home was really powerful for me, guys, you know, to be able to do this in my backyard, in my local community. But you know what's interesting? I could let every one of them say, well, it's COVID. But you know what? There are restaurants that did pretty well in COVID. They were nimble. They went into right. delivery really quickly. They did this, they did that. Some guys didn't. So they're still at fault in many ways. They still could have been better at this or better at that. So I was still myself and I was honest, but you bet, Ralph, it was a different kind of season because of COVID for sure.
There's a friend of mine who owns a restaurant two blocks from my house, a good friend, and his restaurant was in danger of closing prior to COVID. Like where he was like, we thought he was going to be done. He pivoted during COVID so successfully that now he is probably going to be opening up more than like a couple of other restaurants. He brought on more staff. Every time I walk by, I take a picture because there's like 25, 30 people waiting in line to go in there. I was like, dude, you really fucking pivoted this to the better than anybody. It was pretty amazing to see.
Yeah, that's You've a great example.
So you can do it. You've been doing the show now over eight years or so. And
ten,
you said
actually,
very many
ten
times.
Years.
10 years?
10
Jesus
years.
Christ. So you said many times you thought you were going to do a pilot and that was it, right? But at some point you had to realize, oh, wait a minute. People are recognizing me. This is becoming a thing. When did you realize that you were becoming the person you are now, you know, where it was like, oh, the aha moment.
I think it was season four, and I was in production meetings, and I looked at my team and I said, look, guys, this is your business, not mine. I'm a hospitality guy. What should we do? And they looked at me, John, you can't say that anymore. You're a fucking television star. You're an executive producer. You are in the television business. You can't say I'm not in this business anymore. So then, you know, when you start out and somebody recognizes you, it's like, wow, they recognize me. That's really cool. 10 years into it, when somebody recognizes, it's more like, ah, fuck. and you're nice to everybody, but there's times you don't want to see them and everything. You know, guys, this year I did 11 billion media impressions, according to my publicist's printout.
Jesus.
And, you know, wow, that's, I mean, think about that. That's devastating to me.
That's
I never
wild.
Thought I'd be a television star. You know, I
yeah,
never
according to that guy 25, 30 years ago, no, 10 years ago, that you're too old and you're never going to be on TV. So he was wrong.
Yeah. So I never thought any of this would happen. You know, fame is an interesting thing when it hits you late in life.
Yeah.
You know, it's a double-edged sword. People expect me to be me and to be, you know, on all the time. And you know, it's a strange thing when it happens to you later in life. And I love it. Don't get me wrong, guys. I don't pay for dinner in many restaurants these days. you know, it's been an unbelievable experience. Honestly, guys, I feel like I'm hugged by America every week.
That's really sweet. Let me ask you this. I just thought of this. I have a few more questions, then we'll do the first. I'd be interested to hear this. Do you have a favorite bar or restaurant in New York City that you would say, or you don't like doing something like that?
No, I don't want to do that. There's a number of them. You know, employees only is one that comes to mind. There's a few.
Great place.
Yep.
All right, pretty cool. Okay, so now I read this about you, which I think is fascinating if it's true. You believe live music is going to make a comeback in this country because it's at an all-time low. And also that clubs are going to come back because now I just read it 2 days ago. The first mega club in New York that holds like 1,000 people is opening for the first time. And I don't even know how many fucking years. So do you see that being a reality that that's going to come back?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm not sure about the large mega club. You know, I'm not sure I believe in that coming back, but the pendulum has swung, guys. You know, since I've been in this business, live music, recorded music, it swings at different speeds. But the fact is the DJ thing gets boring after a while, so we start dropping in live bands. The live bands get boring after a while, so we start dropping in DJs. And that pendulum will always swing back and forth.
Right. I was a DJ and promoter for Limelight in New York City, as well as Palladium back when I was a kid. So I worked around the mega clubs, which was, you know, place that held 5,000 people. I don't think that'll ever exist again. That was
my greatest accomplishment ever was probably opening Pulsations in Glen Mills, Pennsylvania.
Oh, wow. I remember that place.
Which was 56,000 square feet with a 27-foot spaceship that flew into the room and dropped a $460,000 alien robot on the dance floor. And our robot was in Rocky IV.
Oh, that was your robot.
Yeah.
Happy birthday, Paulie. That guy, right? That's fucking great. All right. For fans over the age of 21, I want to tell you about Fully Loaded Chew. The holiday season is fast approaching, and a lot of our fans are either still smoking cigarettes or hitting those vape pens. So if you're a smoker or a vapor, so now nicotine is an addictive chemical. So we're not suggesting this to use this to any new users, but if you're currently smoking, if you're vaping or using some other dip, I'd like you to try Fully Loaded Chew. And here's why. Lifelong dippers are switching to Fully Loaded Chew. It's the only chew with tobacco-free nicotine. Tobacco-free nicotine means less bad shit in your mouth. Fully Loaded's motto is save a lip. And they've got some great full flavors like wintergreen, mint, bourbon, peach, all available at FullyLoadedChew.com. Be sure to try their reformulated classic flavor as well. It's the closest to Copenhagen and tobacco-free. Fully Loaded Chew comes at all different nicotine levels, so full strength is the same nicotine as any other chew, but if you're looking to cut back on your nicotine or wean yourself off of nicotine, they have half strength and full flavor, which means no nicotine at all. So once more, if you're a dipper, you have to try Fully Loaded Chew. And the team at Gas and Fully Loaded worked to put together an amazing promotion for you. If you go to FullyLoadedChew.com and use the promo code GAS1, that's G-A-S and the number one, you're going to get a free tin of Fully Loaded or a drive for just $1 and free shipping on any purchase you make. Once more, it's FullyLoadedChew.com. Promo code is GAS1, G-A-S and the number one, for a free tin and free shipping. So check it out, FullyLoadedChew.com, and save a lip with Fully Loaded. Yep. Now, this, I love this term. Ready? John is the inventor of the butt funnel.
Excuse me?
I'm going to leave it at that. The butt funnel.
The butt funnel.
So, I mean, don't explain yet, John. I'm going to ask James. James, what do you think the butt funnel is? Keep in mind, it's not going to be, you know, it's John Taffer. It's not going to be something that you shove up your ass, most likely. So what do you think it is before we let him explain what it is?
I mean, the name. First of all, touchdown. Let's just give you 6 points right there. The butt funnel, outstanding. Outstanding. The butt funnel is probably something you sit on to make a stool more comfortable, and it funnels your booty so you feel good, so you can enjoy the mozzarella sticks, which is the stairway to heaven of appetizers. Debate if you want. All right. There it is.
So you're suggesting that spreading one's cheeks while they sit in a bar stool will provide a better hospitality experience.
Somehow improve the dining experience.
It takes the pressure away, and then you can enjoy the mozzarella sticks and the
calamari. It lines up the gastro tract.
Very convenient for flatulence as well, wouldn't you say?
Well, let it all out. Let's just be comfortable in 2021. We had a rough fucking 18 months with COVID. Let's go, baby.
So can a butt you funnel.
Yeah. I hate to disappoint you, buddy, but a butt funnel is not a device.
Oh.
I know. It's very disappointing to you. A butt funnel is actually a 30-inch opening into a dance floor. It's got to be 30 inches. Here's the logic. I see Shannon on the other side of the room. She looks pretty good to me. I want to meet her. She's walking up to the dance floor. She's about to walk through the butt funnel. I want to time it at the same time. So Shannon and I go through the butt funnel together. Now, as we approach the butt funnel, hopefully she stays face to face. So we sort of rub up against each other. Our eyes connect. We smile. But I got a feeling many times before Shannon approaches the butt funnel, she will spin, causing an ass-to-face transaction, which is not the same as the face-to-face. At the end of the day, the butt funnel is what I call an interactive feature in a nightclub that causes people's eyes to connect and meet each other.
Great. It's great.
Pretty cool genius, shit, huh?
Sir. Yeah. One of my most successful promotions as a nightclub promoter, we did a night called The Quest for the Perfect Kiss. And when you came in, you were given $100 in play money. And the idea was to buy and sell kisses from whoever you want the whole night. Whoever ended up with the most money won a trip to Aruba, and they could bring someone from the bar or bring someone else. And it was the most successful thing we ever threw. We did it like every couple of months at a club for years.
Boy, you're so timid. Let me tell you one of mine. Small plungers. Small plungers. Guys sit on bar stools, put the plungers between their legs, spray whipped cream all over the wooden handle. A girl on her knees in front of him, the first girl who gets all the whipped cream off the plunger wins $1,000.
Wow. I think my mom won that 3 years in a row.
We moved past kisses years ago, buddy. We got
this was 1986.
The other thing we would do is we would do the plunger, and instead of whipped cream, we'd put red paint on it and give the girl sandpaper. So she had to do this.
Jesus
and the Christ. First girl to get all the red paint off it would win.
I'm guessing that HuffPo did not exist back then, because there would have been some interesting blogs the next morning.
Yeah. We used to call it the Sexual Olympics. We used to do all that.
We do that. Can't,
it's all politically incorrect today, right. And I'm not suggesting that they are correct today. You know, these are old stories from years ago, so I'm not looking to offend anybody. But it was fun back then.
Right. And then because I know nothing about sports, so I apologize when I say this, but apparently you are the creator of the concept of the NFL Sunday Ticket. I don't even know what that means, but I'm sure it means something to James.
Yeah, I got the red zone. I'm a football guy. Yeah, man, it's the best. Yeah. All this stuff's the greatest idea ever.
Yeah, we created the original business model and programming model for NFL Sunday Ticket. Mm-hmm. And as consulting companies. So in as much as the concept of out of market sports programming pre-existed before that, you know, you could buy the Dallas Signal in New York, things like that. Never had there been one place. So we were retained by a company to put together a model for a football programming package. And we designed a model, put it all together. And this company was called ComSat. They then went to the NFL to try to license the Signal to do the business plan that we put together. And the NFL looked at it and said, you know, this is pretty terrific. Let's do it ourselves. And then they put me on the advisory board of NFL Enterprises.
Wow.
And it turned into Sunday Ticket, and it was rolled out then.
That's pretty wild. That's cool. And watching bits and pieces of the last season when I can, I notice a lot of new tech gadgets and new, like, cleaning equipment. Are you constantly trying to look for the things that are going to make the food and beverage industry strive forward? Do you find things that you like and stay there, or you're always looking for the next creative thing?
Sure. I mean, I own Taffer's Tavern. You'll get a kick out of this. I created this restaurant concept 3 years ago. It's all robotic and computerized.
Wow.
There's not a stove or a traditional oven in the entire restaurant. Everything is sous vide and robotically and computer cooking. The food is unbelievable. It's incredibly consistent. We've removed the human factor from it. We've solved the problem of labor burden. So, yeah, we live day to day seeking out new technologies.
That's awesome.
Engaging with new technologies. And we like to be industry leaders in that regard.
That's cool. Let me ask you, what did you hate? I always hated, I don't even know if they still do it anymore, when it's the pre-measured shot, you put it over. Yep. I always felt that took any sort of like fun out of it. Where I get it from a sales perspective, it felt very sanitary and leaves like there was no character to it. Do you agree with that, or you're a fan of that?
Well, I'm not a fan of that click pour that you
I hate that thing,
that
yeah.
way. On the other hand, I'm of the of the school that I'm going to run software programs and measuring programs on you. And if you overpour one fucking drink, Jay, you're going to hear from me.
Yeah, right. Yeah. We used to send spotters in a lot. That was our thing to do that. And then
of course,
when I was at Limelight, which was crazy, they would put a line on the alcohol to see where it was at before they opened and then where it was at when they ended. And they computed roughly how much should be in the register, which is an archaic
way. We do even
more
than that. We weigh them.
Yeah, now so we'll you can do things
like that. Yeah, it's much more sophisticated. Now, if there's 2 ounces missing, we'll know it.
That's pretty wild. Jesus Christ, that's nuts. Can I ask at your best restaurant, what is your cost for food and beverage? We used to try and get around 27 at our restaurant.
Taffer's Tavern, you know, we run great costs. We're very proud. Our prime costs are about 50%.
Wow.
Which is pretty darn special in the restaurant industry. That's food, beverage, and labor combined.
That's crazy. Yeah. That we were usually for that because it's usually for most restaurants, it was a 30-30-30. 30 on staff, 30 on food and beverage, 30 on fixed expenses, and 10% pure profit for the average restaurant.
You know your business pretty well. Yeah, well, we've been very good at infusing technologies to impact those numbers.
Right. The first thing I did when I worked at the restaurant
is
I fired I fired the cashier and put in a computer system and saved the company $60,000 a year just by doing that. It was like, I don't know why they weren't doing it at that time. Anyway, a couple other quick things, then we got to do questions. This is kind of a sensitive topic, but a wild thing. There's only one episode, to my knowledge, that didn't air, and it was in 2013. The day before it was supposed to come out, the guy who's the subject was killed the singer Wayne Mills. That is fucking crazy.
Unbelievable. You know, what's interesting is I thought he was a really nice, he was a dick in the beginning of the rescue, but at the end of the rescue, I thought he was a really nice guy. And I'll never forget this. When the camera stopped, I was sitting at the bar with his father. And I looked at his father and I said, I forget his name. Forgive me. I looked at his father and said, you know, he's a good guy. I hope he's successful here. And his father looked at me and said, he will fuck it up.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
And I left thinking that, but I still thought that he was a decent guy and everything. And then that incident happened over no smoking in the bar or something. So it happened the day before the episode aired and they had to pull it down. So that is an episode that's never aired.
That's pretty fucking wild. Yeah. And then you did in 2019, I don't know if it got renewed, you did Marriage Rescue with your wife. Are you going to bring that back as well?
Well, you know, Marriage Rescue was really successful, but it was on the same network as Bar Rescue.
Right.
So the network gave me a choice. Which of the, you can't do both. Which of the ones do you, because of time, I can only produce so many.
Yeah.
So, you know, which do you want to do? And we felt I'd continue with Bar Rescue. And that's candidly, brutal. Marriage Rescue, I went to Puerto Rico. I was there for 8 weeks straight. Bar Rescue, I get to come home every week. So some of it was selfish. I didn't want to go away for 8 weeks.
That's pretty wild. Okay. So now your podcast, the John Taffer podcast, I think tomorrow the episode drops with astronaut Jared Isaacman, which is cool. I didn't get to hear it yet. But are you enjoying this field as a form of entertainment, as podcasting?
I am. You know, Bar Rescue is so centrically focused. You know, you guys are comedians. You get to stand on stage and talk to your audience, you know, and interact with them. I don't get to do that on television. Mm-hmm. So this is just a great opportunity for me just to talk and be conversational. I'm really enjoying this together, guys. I mean, this is a lot of fun. People get to know who we are. We get to talk about cool things. So I do. I really enjoy this medium. You know, I love that it's not radio. It's more conversational. Right. It's looser. We can be ourselves. I mean, I look at Jay laying in bed. That's exactly what I'm saying, man. That's sort of what it is. It's cool. You know,
he's been masturbating the whole time as well, John. You can't see that from this angle, but that's
John. I gotta get the poison out. I gotta get the poison out. I mean, I can't go to a bar and have a girl lick whipped cream off the stick anymore. So I got to do it somehow.
I hear you. I hear you, all right, buddy.
We got it. We can't believe the hour went by already, Shannon. But we got to do the first with this man.
The first time ever I saw concert Detroit.
The name of the show is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. We ask every guest this question since we started the show. Your first experience with sex, drugs, and rock and roll. We start with the first one being rock and roll. We mean the first concert you went to, ideally on your own volition, but whatever the story that comes to mind for your first concert.
All right, guys, you're going to be really bummed out or blown away when I tell you this.
Wow, that's
the first concert that I have in my memory is Band of Gypsy, Jimi Hendrix at Fillmore East.
Jesus Christ.
Wow. Why would we be upset about that? That's incredible.
No, only because it's such a special concert to have seen.
That's what they do with Machine Gun.
That was with Machine Gun, you bet.
Oh, my God.
With Buddy Miles as the drummer, right, which was a real shift for Jimmy.
Please.
So that's the first one that comes to mind as a concert. One of the best ones that comes to mind, it was only a few shows later, was the Farewell Cream concert at Madison Square Garden, which was the best one in New York. It was pretty incredible. But I also saw Hendrix at the Garden, and I loved him so much, Jay. You get a kick out of that. I walked around the arena with the revolving stage, so I didn't miss 1 minute of Jimmy.
Yes, of course.
But, you know, those are great, great shows. But Hendrix, I believe, was the first one. I loved Hendrix.
I mean, what a fucking first concert. Jesus Christ. Yeah. All right, now, the first drug you ever did, ideally after weed, unless weed wasn't your first drug.
No, first drug I ever did is I was an idiot in school. And somebody gave me like a downer, second all or something like that. And said, oh, don't take this. It'll make you tingle. It'll make you feel really good. So I took this pill. I was 15 years old. I was an idiot. I took this pill and I got on my bicycle to go home. And I'm driving down this hill and I guess I fell asleep on my bicycle, but I smashed into a car.
Oh my God.
Went over. And then my friend's father was a doctor. I didn't want to go to my parents because I would be in trouble. So I went to my friend's father. The doctor says, listen, you take this pill to go to sleep. The pill you took to stay asleep. That was the end of my chemical drug experiences in my life.
Oh, that's really funny. And now what about the first?
I stayed to tokable items through most of those years.
Oh, fair enough. And now the first time you had sex?
First time I had sex, I was about 15 or 16. I was very blessed to have the same girlfriend in high school for about 7 years.
Wow.
And we were very, very close together. So my first sexual experience and hers was together at a friend's house. I believe we were 15.
That's nice. And then you stayed together for a while after that,
three years.
Imagine.
Oh, yeah. And that's still good friends. Nice. Still good friends to this day.
Wow.
And you've been married now for a long time as well, right?
I've been married to Nicole. We've been together for 21 years, been together 25 years. I was married prior to Nicole for 15 years.
And also, you seem like a big dude. I'm 6'6", almost 6'5" and change. How tall are you?
Oh, you're bigger than me. I'm about 6'2".
6'2". Okay. James, how tall are you?
Yo, 5'10 and a half. But as Abraham Lincoln said, tall enough to touch the ground, baby.
Fair enough. All right. So now Taffer's Tavern is open. There's new ones opening. You go on the website and see. You have a line of mixologist mixers and seltzers that I saw. The John Taffer podcast, I said the new episode drops tomorrow with astronaut Jared Isaacman. You have a couple of books, Don't Bullshit Yourself and Raise the Bar, the two that I know of. And then, of course, Bar Rescue. The last season that ended was in Vegas. I'm assuming the new season. Do you know when the new episodes start to drop?
Typically, they drop February, right after Super Bowl.
Right after
we
Super
tend to,
Bowl.
To relaunch right after the football season.
Oh,
and
great.
One more thing I'd like to add. I have a new frozen food line. Taffer's Tavern Frozen Foods that drops in all Costco's across the country next week.
And do I sous vide it or do I microwave it?
You cook it in your oven. You cook it in your traditional oven. It's an unbelievable. It's a 5-pound beef shank.
Jesus.
With a beautiful bone. It's really cool. With a bone coming out of the middle. You'll see it in Costco.
That's pretty wild. And then, of course, follow him at John Taffer on Instagram as well. Did I forget to plug anything else before we go around and do the plugs?
Nah, you guys are great.
All right, James, hit it.
The James Madden on Instagram. New podcast with Shuli, formerly the Stern Show. Thanks for coming out about bombing. It's the shit. It's dropping in November. And, dude, my album drops November 12th. It's called The Check Spot. It is me doing a Q&A with the audience while they pay their bills. The worst part of the comedy show, November 12th. Check it out. And here, one last plug. I just booked this. I'll be back in Vegas for the holidays and I'll be working at the Comedy Cellar December 20th through 26th. Come see me at the Cellar. Your boy, Chaparral High School's boy is coming home, baby.
Mary John, you should go see him. Shannon, your plug.
I will.
Come on up.
You can follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about dating, fighting, and ghosts and wearing my merch. We have people from all walks of life come on, comedians, porn stars, musicians, reality TV stars, and they tell their personal experiences of their worst date experiences, a time they've gotten into a street fight, and their experiences with the paranormal. And all before right. you ask the question, Ralph, I just want to say I've been a bartender for about 19 years, John. And I mean, the entire time that the show has existed, I've watched, and there are things that pop into my mind to this day behind the bar that stuck with me from watching the show. One in particular is shaking the shaker up by my head and making eye contact with the customers. I do that still to this day.
Do you have any other favorite moments, Shannon? Because I know you watch the show religiously. I should have asked you that earlier. I apologize.
That one stays with me because I still think about it. Because when I'm very busy and I want to like turn my back or something as I'm shaking or doing something else, I make sure to not do it, to not break eye contact.
When you're shaking and break eye contact, did he also tell you to lick your lips and grab your breasts?
I missed that.
Make sure they're not useless.
Okay, fair enough. Follow me everywhere
I got to ask him.
Yeah, John, we ask every guest this because her show is about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts. We're always curious. Don't give us an indication yet about whether or not you believe in ghosts. I'm saying no. Shannon, what do you say?
I want to say yes, only because with all of the bars that he's been in, and so many bars are claimed to be haunted and have weird shit that happens. So I really want to think and that it's yes.
James, what do you say, no or yes?
Not a chance in hell, because if you're a ghost, that's probably an excuse. Oh, you can't just lay.
Why are you not pouring drinks, you fucking spirit?
Well, no. Why aren't you just chilling in the graveyard? You had to come back and haunt people. You didn't have enough fucking time on Earth.
Is it because of the hero in Greece?
I did a bar rescue episode with a haunted bar years ago, and this guy was an ex-Marine. He was a tough motherfucker. Mm-hmm. And this guy wouldn't go in his bar for over 2 years.
Whoa.
Get out.
So I show up as a non-believer. And I go to do this bar, and this guy believes. I mean, Jay, this guy is terrified to walk in this place, and he's not an idiot. He's a tough guy. The employees are terrified to walk in this place.
Wow.
Well, we go in and start shooting in there, and a couple books fall off a shelf, but this happens, that. So, you know, it was surprising. I'll tell you what, I'm not a believer, but I believe there are people who truly are.
Fair enough. Okay, there we go. I like that. That's what the important thing is.
Really,
I was right. That's
ending.
All that fucking matters.
I win that one. Yeah.
Follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton. And my other podcast on health and wellness with the founder of Juice Press comes out every Monday, called The Good Sugar Podcast. And John, honestly, as I knew it would be, it was a pleasure having you on the show, sir.
Same here, Ralph. Same here. Thank you, guys. Excellent. Jay, it was a pleasure, buddy. Shannon, pleasure, nice to see you.
And we'll add a song of the week.
Let's do it again sometime.
Absolutely. We add a song of the week every week. Why don't we add Jimi Hendrix, since you talked about it as your first episode. Makes a lot of sense. We'll play a Jimi Hendrix tune, and we'll see everybody next time on the SDR Show.
You've been listening to the SDR Show.